It's been 1 year since I first picked up the iPhone 15 Pro, and over that time, the way that I've used my phone and my thoughts surrounding it have changed significantly. Last year when the 15 Pro was announced, there were quite a few new features that I was excited about, from the new titanium housing to the action button and the introduction of USB-C, amongst other things. And while some of those have turned out to be great, there are still some areas where I felt the iPhone 15 Pro is lagging or could be better. Today, I want to go over what the last year has looked like on this device, what I've personally found helpful in terms of features and performance, and on the flip side, what needs to be improved and how this stacks up against the iPhone 16 Pro at a glance. So if you want to see what my experiences looked like, and if the 15 Pro is still a good option moving forward, especially with the new iPhones on the horizon, stick around and let's get into it. Hey everyone, Kyle Erickson here. Over the course of the year, I've had plenty of time to get familiar with the iPhone 15 Pro. It's seen a ton of everyday use as my primary phone, but I've also taken it on trips with me, tested it against a bunch of other devices, and I think the initial excitement faded fairly quickly, but not in a bad way. As the novelty has kind of worn off, I've come to appreciate many things about this phone. More than I thought I would anyway, the first of which is the design with the titanium housing. The 15 Pro is the first year the iPhone has released with a thin titanium shell, and it looks as good as the day that I bought it. I've used the 15 Pro, I want to say about 75% of the time with a case on, and about 25% without. And even with a couple of caseless drops and general use, there are virtually no marks or scratches. I've really come to like the natural titanium color with a brushed metal finish a lot more than the glossy stainless steel on the previous generation. And having more of a matte finish means it does show dirt and dust a lot less, but in my opinion, the biggest difference the titanium makes is in weight, where the 15 Pro is about 19 grams lighter than the 14 Pro. I know that might seem like a trivial amount, but that's still just over 9% lighter, and if you're like me and you rest your phone on your pinky, there's noticeably less fatigue over extended use, especially when you slap on a case. Another new design change in the 15 Pro was the introduction of the action button, which I've kind of had mixed feelings about. To be quite honest, for the first 3 or 4 months, I didn't really know what to use this for, and still to this day, I'm not entirely sure that the placement is the greatest. I often hit it when I'm trying to hit the volume up button or vice versa, and I think it would make more sense to change up the volume controls to a single rocker style button. That way there'd be more distinction between the two, or maybe if there was just a bigger gap between them, but regardless of placement, I did eventually find that to be quite useful. I first experimented using this to open up ChatGPT, the Notes app, and a few other things. But what I finally settled on was opening up the Blackmagic camera app, which has ended up being something that I use at least a couple times a week. That app has a lot of the advanced features that I look for when recording video that you just don't get with a stock camera app, like setting frame rates, white balance, ISO, and all that good stuff. And it also has the ability to record in ProRes Apple Log, which was new to the iPhone 15 Pro as well. Previously, I rarely used to record video with my iPhone, but recording in Apple Log gives off a much more natural look that isn't over-sharpened or processed like the regular video mode. And it allows me to put my own grade and look on it, so it matches the footage from my mirrorless camera. That's led to me using the 15 Pro for video a lot more, even for these videos, although recording in Log takes up an absurd amount of storage space, which can be alleviated by recording to an external drive through the new USB-C port, which we're gonna touch on in a couple of minutes. Well, the great thing about the Blackmagic camera app is I can adjust the ProRes codec to one that results in much smaller file sizes, which makes things a lot more manageable for recording to on-device storage. Outside of that specific instance, the camera system stayed pretty much the same as the previous gen, but I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I found my iPhone is all I really need to take photos when I'm out and about or on vacation, and I'd much rather just use that over a bulky mirrorless camera, and I have been really impressed with the photos. I find portrait photos look a lot better than most phones with things like edge detection, which is likely due to the LiDAR scanner on the Pro iPhones. But I really have no complaints with any of the lenses other than the low light performance on the ultra-wide camera, which can be a little bit soft. And I'm not quite sure if I prefer the 3x telephoto focal length over the 5x on the 15 Pro Max, but regardless, some of my favorite photos have come off that lens. Similarly with performance, the 15 Pro has run everything that I've thrown at it with zero issues, whether that's editing photos in Lightroom or if I'm watching content or gaming. I tend to do more of the latter when I'm traveling, and one thing that I've noticed specifically while gaming versus all the Android phones that I've been using this year is the external controller support is much better overall on iOS. Normally, it just works with the iPhone regardless of the game, but with Android, it seems to be more hit or miss. The phone can tend to warm up a little bit with some of those tasks, which is something that I still get asked about a lot, but it's never been a major issue with those particular things, but that's not to say that I haven't come across any heat problems. I did have one instance where I was on a long road trip driving with the iPhone 15 Pro on my car's wireless charger and my wallet sitting on top of it while I was using GPS. I ended up getting my first and only heat warning, which I think was a combination of all these things happening on device plus the wallet smothering it a bit. And it does seem to get relatively warm when it does charge, but nothing that I've ever been overly concerned with. Normally I charge wirelessly, which will generate a little more heat than wired, but I still have outstanding battery health at 96%, and it really doesn't feel any different than the day that I bought it battery-wise. But I will say I don't get the greatest battery life on the 6.1-inch version, as I set my charge limit to 80% as soon as I bought my phone. That has been an interesting experiment over the year, where I've been watching other people post their battery health percentage at different points in time, and it seems to be making more of a difference the longer that I track it, having that 80% limit turned on, where the percent value has dropped a little bit slower than average, but it's definitely a pain because you're not using the full capacity of the phone, so it does have to go in the charger a lot more often. I've mentioned this before, but it's not a huge deal for me because I've got quite a few wireless chargers around me, and sometimes I'll plug it into a wired charger if I need to top it up quick because, again, I've always got USB-C cables and chargers kicking around for all my other devices. That's been such a nice convenience to have this year, where I don't have to worry about having two sets of cables for my iPhones and all my other devices. And every USB accessory that I've tried with the iPhone 15 Pro, whether that be the Backbone One controller, USB hubs, SSDs, and so on, have all worked without a hitch. That's been great for when I occasionally record videos to SSDs if I know I'm going to be recording a lot of it. And file transfers are pretty quick as well, as you do have 10 gigabit per second data transfer speeds. So even if you record a huge file on your device and transfer it afterwards, it will move pretty quick, which wasn't the case on previous models. Outside of that, I'm not really sure that there's much worth mentioning that I haven't brought up in previous reviews. Bluetooth and Wi-Fi connections have been great, network speeds have been quick, and there's not really much to complain about. Now, when it comes to comparing this to the 16 Pro that Apple just announced this week, obviously I can't say too much because I don't have it in my hands yet, but I am planning on ordering both the 16 and the 16 Pro to review, so make sure that you're subscribed if you want to see those, but there are some things that we know for sure right now, at least according to Apple. The CPU is supposed to be 15% faster and the GPU 20% faster in the 16 Pro over the 15 Pro, which I think for most things is probably not going to be perceivable. That being said, you're going to get a larger screen size in both the Pro and the Pro Max, with the Pro in particular going from 6.1 inches to 6.3, and the 5x telephoto lens is coming to the smaller 16 Pro this year, along with a new capacitive camera button, which I don't really know how to feel about yet. That is supposed to have a variety of purposes, from being a shutter button to controlling different elements of the camera and having some integration with Apple Intelligence, which does kind of look cool, but it's kind of a wait and see for me, as I'm not entirely sure having more physical buttons is really what we need. And it just seems like a lot of these features could be implemented with software, but my opinion could definitely shift once I've got it in my hands. There are also some other minor updates in the 16 Pro that only a few people will likely use, like recording 4K video at 120 frames per second, and a faster photo shutter if you're taking raw 48 megapixel photos, and some new studio mics, which are supposed to sound better, but again, we really won't know how much better those are until people start actually testing them out. On top of that, there are some things that Apple didn't really touch on at the event. The Pro iPhones will have Wi-Fi 7, where the 15 Pro has Wi-Fi 6E, and the 16 Pro is a little bit heavier with that bump in screen size. Charging-wise, MagSafe is getting a bump to 30 watts on the 16 Pro, which is double that of the 15 Pro. The cooling system is supposed to be upgraded, and the battery life is supposed to be a little bit better as well, so there are definitely some improvements in the 16 Pro, but I still do think that there's a lot of value in the 15 Pro. You're still gonna get all the Apple Intelligence features, and even though it's not quite as good as the 16 Pro in some areas, if you compare both side by side, they probably have more in common than not, and the differences they do have seem to be minimal most of the time. I think if I weren't in the position that I am now, and it wasn't my job to review these products, I'd probably just stick with my 15 Pro, but also, if you do have a limited budget, and you can find a really good deal on a 15 Pro right now, it still is a great phone, and I don't think you have to worry too much about missing out not having this year's model. That being said, we'll have to wait and see what these new phones are actually like when they come out, and like I said, I will be covering those, and the new Apple Watch, and maybe some AirPods. I'm not so sure on the AirPods yet, but if you would like to see those on the channel, let me know in the comments down below, along with what you're most excited about with the new phones, and what you'd like to see me go over with those. That's all I have for you today. I hope you enjoyed this video or you found it useful. If you did, feel free to hit that like button. If you want to see more tech-related content, or help me design a smartwatch that displays random fortunes every hour instead of the time, please subscribe. Thank you so much for watching, and I will see you in the next upload.